This is AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2. We're streaming online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Welcome to the Afternoon Magazine. In this portion of the program, we'll explore the meaning of family with Mei-Ling Hopgood. Born in Taiwan, she grew up in the Midwest in a town near Detroit. She knew she had been adopted, but she hadn't been particularly curious about her Chinese family. Then when she was 23, her birth family called from half a world away. Mei-Ling Hopgood tells the story in her memoir, Lucky Girl. Listeners, I hope you'll join us this afternoon with your questions and comments. Perhaps you have a story of adoption to share with us. I look forward to your telephone calls. Our number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. W-I-L-L. Mei-Ling Hopgood is an award-winning journalist. She's written for several newspapers, including the Detroit Free Press, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and the Miami Herald. She's also worked in the Washington, D.C. Bureau of Cox Newspapers. She now lives in Buenos Aires with her husband, Monte Real, and their daughter. Mei-Ling's memoir, Lucky Girl, is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Mei-Ling, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Hi, Celeste. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, good. Very good. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So why do you suppose you weren't particularly curious about your Chinese family?
You know, when growing up in the Midwest, in Detroit, all I wanted to ever do was just be American and live my American life here in the suburbs of Detroit. I was so concentrated on fitting in the community where I was living, I think I just sort of tried to not think of being different. The other reason I think that I didn't really long much for information was that I was really happy with the family that I had. I always felt that I was a lucky girl, part of the reason I named this book Lucky Girl, and really just felt like, you know, I didn't necessarily need to know more.
Yeah. How did your sense of being a lucky girl change over the course of meeting your birth family?
Well, you know, one of the striking things that happened when I first began communicating with my family was that I found out, let me start by saying I had always known the basics. I knew that I came from a poor family in the south of Taiwan. They had too many children, and they just couldn't raise that many children. I assumed, and my family assumed, that it was because they wanted a boy as well, because the tradition was so strong within my family, and there were many girls. So I just basically perceived that I was lucky, I had a better fate where I was. When I got information about my birth family, I discovered that actually I did have many sisters. I had six sisters that were raised in Taiwan, one that had been given up to a family in Switzerland. Those sisters in Taiwan, though, were educated, beautiful, had good jobs. They were middle class. My family had moved out of poverty and into the middle class. So it was striking to me that everything that I had believed about my past really turned out to be not so true.
Yeah. You grew up on Gerber baby food and apples and Sesame Street and Dr. Seuss, and at not quite 3 years of age, dreamed you'd marry the Fonz.
Yeah.
But it wasn't all happy days. There were anti-Asian sentiments, and you write about feeling, you know, some isolation. What was it like growing up in Taylor, Michigan in the 1970s and 80s?
Well, it was, you know, it was a friendly, my family was very connected in the community. They were teachers. They knew many people. It's not a big town. It's probably, I believe, around 80,000. A lot of people knew my family. But on the other hand, there was a lot of ignorance. There was a violent attack against a Chinese American in Detroit, Vincent Chin, and that made national news. There were anti-Japanese sentiments because of the Japanese automakers at that time. So people were, you know, not everyone, but there were some ignorant people who might yell epithets at us or make stupid comments or things like that. My family always tried to teach us those were just ignorant people, you are beautiful, etc. But being, you know, one of very few Asian Americans in my town growing up at that time, that was hard for me. And I didn't, you know, I never talked about it with my parents or even my brothers, who are Korean. But inside, you know, I felt pretty insecure when I was growing up as a child and as an adolescent.
Yeah. Now, as you mentioned, you have two brothers, also adopted, from Korea. Since now you've written Lucky Girl, and going back to 1997 when you first had the reunion, or not a reunion, a union, with your birth family, have you and your brothers and your parents talked about all of this?
Not necessarily that we sat down and talked all together.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, you know, being such the journalist all the time, I had them do, after I reunited with my family alone in 1997, or with a nun who arranged my adoption, we all went back to Taiwan and Korea the next year. And I actually had them write for me kind of an essay or just a recollection of what the experience was like for them. I interviewed them, but, you know, we really never sort of sat down and talked about the experience as a family. Maybe I spoke one-on-one with my brothers or my parents and I talked about it, but we really never said, oh, you know, had a big family gathering and talked about it.
Mm. It strikes me that in one sense you have three mothers.
Yes.
You have your mother, you have your birth mother, and you have Sister Maureen.
Yes, yes, very much.
And
arguably you could say I have other mothers that came later in my life, just as role models.
Mm-hmm. And Mei Ling is the Chinese name for Sister Maureen.
Yes.
Tell us about her.
She's magnificent. She was working as a midwife in Taitung when I was born, and that's how our paths crossed. She had one of her her relatives worked with my parents, and so they got in touch with her. She is actually working in California now, in the psychology field. She's just wonderful. She travels to Africa a lot to do work in helping people in Tanzania. She's just fantastic. In fact, much of her family that still lives in Michigan came to my launch party this weekend on her behalf, and it was great to see them.
Mm. And now you have to tell us about a couple of more magnificent people, Chris and Raleigh Hopgood.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about these parents who raised you and your brothers.
Well, they're great. As I said, they were longtime educators. They couldn't have children themselves. They were in their second marriage, couldn't have children themselves, and wanted to get to having children right away. They looked into domestic adoptions, and for whatever reason, they just decided they might give the international adoption a try, which was not very common at that time in the early 1970s, like it is today. They were just loving, supportive, and even more so, I realized this as an adult, as I went through this reunion process, they were incredibly supportive. And at the same time, they let me have all these emotions. They let me get to know this birth family. They could have been threatened. They could have been just felt like this was an intrusion into our lives, but they always told me that, in fact, my adopted father told me, you know, we always knew that this didn't end our chapter in your life. This is just another one. This is just an extension. And they just have been terrific.
Hmm. So let's go back to not long after college. You have a job in Detroit working for the Free Press. And then in a telephone call from your mom, she suggests you call Sister Maureen.
Yes.
And Sister Maureen was very happy to hear that you were well and had done so well. And she also told you at some point, I don't know if it was in the phone call. Yes, it was in the phone call.
Yes,
she said,
yes.
I have a picture of your birth mother.
Yes.
How did that bit of information affect you?
I was shocked. You know, like I said, I really never thought much about her. Or, you know, looking back, I think now that perhaps I didn't think much about her because I wasn't sure that I'd ever know much about her. And there's a certain level of self-preservation there going on there. You know, at the time I probably would have said, no, you know, I don't really care. I have my life here. But also there, I think there was a bit of trying to protect myself from being hurt. So when I heard there was a picture, it was very, very striking to me, and I was very anxious to see it. Because one of the things I definitely wondered growing up is if I looked like her, if my body was like her, if my face was like her, those sort of natural things that a person would wonder, a young person would wonder. One of the other things that Sister Maureen told me that absolutely sent me and just melted my heart was when she told me that my mother, after saying she had a picture, she said that my birth mother didn't want to give me up.
Mm.
And it just absolutely melted me, and I broke into tears, which surprised me because I had never, once again, thought about it. And because I never dared to ask that question, if my mother had wanted or not to give me up.
Yeah.
Thus began a very emotional journey that I never expected to have.
Yeah. Did you ever entertain any thoughts, feelings deep down about your birth father?
You know, it's funny, I didn't. And I'm not sure why. I wondered if I looked like him, but beyond that, I kind of knew instinctively that he might have been at the heart of the whole I want a boy obsession in my family. I would come to know this later for sure, but I suspected that, and I think I just didn't like that much, so didn't wonder too much. But he is, as I would find out, a larger-than-life personality that really shaped a lot, really impacted a lot of our lives in what he did and said. So, you know, he's an interesting and complex guy.
Yeah. In a letter you received from one of your sisters early in the going, she wrote to you, if you do understand the past culture of Chinese, you will find that girls had been considered nothing. What's the situation today? Is there still as much pressure to have sons?
In the cities, and this is, you know, I'm not an expert, but from what I get from my sisters and from my friends and from traveling there, Taiwan is different because there is no one-child policy, and people are much more open about it. I know Chinese friends that say, you know, my parents never thought that, from Taiwan. In the cities and in most areas, I think, the attitude is changing. Now, in the rural areas in Taiwan and also in China, the belief still exists. So as we see with the young Chinese girls that are still being adopted from China, as we see from the studies that say that there is just way too many Chinese boys and not enough Chinese girls to marry them now, the belief is still very much there.
Mm. Also, in the past, adoption was seen as humiliating and embarrassing. That is for a Chinese couple to adopt.
Yes.
Is that the story as well today?
You know, I in the news stories I've read, I believe it is, and I know within my own birth family, it is as well, because there are members of my family that are adopted that they will never tell. And it was ironic to me that I would return and they would celebrate my return and make a very big deal about it, but they still wouldn't tell those people who are adopted within their family who was adopted.
Yeah. I have a brother and sister-in-law, brother-in-law and sister-in-law, who have adopted children from Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And in the recent past now, it's becoming more difficult. There are concerns about international adoption. Can you give us any news there? What's your perspective on that?
I don't know what the most recent developments are. I know that there are legislators that are reconsidering whether to allow international adoptions. It's sort of a national shame and pride issue, I think. They're ashamed that they have given away their children, so to speak. There's also a movement, as you probably know from your family, that Korea is also welcoming back the adult adoptees that left. Both my brothers have traveled there and been part of some of this this movement. So, I don't know exactly what is going on right now, but I know there was a movement to slow things down, as there is in China.
Yeah, it's very interesting because there's a lot of push and pull.
Yes,
as definitely. You know, it's very emotional.
Definitely, very emotional.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Journalist Mayling Hopgood is our guest this afternoon here on the program. She is the author of a memoir, Lucky Girl. We're talking this afternoon a little bit about the meaning of family and about Mayling Hopgood's family. She was born in Taiwan. She grew up in Middle America in a town near Detroit. She knew she'd been adopted but hadn't been particularly curious about her Chinese family. Then when she was 23, that changed in a big way. She went to Taiwan to meet her birth family in 1997. Mayling Hopgood tells the story in her memoir, Lucky Girl. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments. Perhaps you have a story of adoption to share with us. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to join us, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. 333-WILL. Well, when you got together with Sister Maureen and you saw the picture and she said, it probably wouldn't be very difficult to find your family if you wanted to, how did you begin to process that possibility?
I didn't. I was shocked that I would be able to. And I was only, when she mentioned this, I was only 21 and just getting out of the University of Missouri, just starting my career as a journalist, just moving back home to Detroit. That was a little bit much for me to take. I told her at that time, though, I said, well, if you really, if you might want to write to the hospital and just see if they're there, but don't tell them that I want to find them yet. I'd be okay with that, but I'm not sure that I'm ready for contact.
Yeah, and then it was almost by accident that it happened.
Yeah, no, and exactly by accident. Sister Maureen thought to herself, well, it doesn't sound like she really wants to get in touch quite yet. I'll wait.
Uh-huh.
I left the Detroit area because of a newspaper strike there, moved to St. Louis, and wrote a Christmas card to Maureen the next year, and just asked the question, did you ever write to the hospital? And she interpreted that question to be, write to the hospital. And immediately, within weeks, I started receiving letters, emails, phone calls, all saying, come home, Mayling, we want you to come home.
Wow.
And it was surreal.
Yeah.
Very surreal.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call, and then we'll continue this story well. Listener waiting to talk with us in Urbana. Line one, hi.
Hi. I saw a documentary once about an Asian American who was also adopted and went back to meet her family, and she had a difficulty because they were expecting her to function like the older, wealthy daughter, and they kept making all sorts of economic and emotional demands on her. Did you have that experience with your family?
I actually saw that documentary, Daughter from Da Nang. That was an amazing, amazing documentary, and I actually saw it after I met my parents for the first time. No, I didn't. My birth family paid for my trip to go there, and my adopted family paid for Sister Maureen to accompany me that first year. They're overly generous in giving me things. Every time I go, they give me jewelry and things and a little bit of money and things like that. So no, they were in a much better position. They had my birth father had gotten into real estate, and so they had money. And it was a matter, too, for them at least, of shame. That would be shameful to ask me that.
Okay. Very interesting story. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions, comments are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, what was the tone of all these communications that suddenly you were inundated with? Letters, phone calls, email, faxes.
The message, the overriding message was, we want you to come back.
Yeah.
My sisters luckily spoke some English. I spoke next to nothing in Chinese. I could say hello. That was the limit to my Mandarin. And they were, because they had gone, many of them had gone, most of them had gone to the university. They knew some English. They, I'm sure, were studying it because they wanted to communicate with me. They all were very just excited and telling me about themselves. But more, every single message was, we want you to come back to Taiwan.
Yeah. So this is kind of thrilling. On the other hand, you feared what you call the Pandora's box of the House of Wang. What kinds of things were you feeling that you weren't sure whether you were ready to embrace this family, to head off to Taiwan?
Well, yeah, I was totally in shock. During those couple of months, absolutely in shock. And I think, you know, I was comfortable not knowing in a lot of ways. You know, and I wouldn't feel like this until I actually started writing this book or realizing how I was feeling at the time, but I just felt pretty cozy being happy with my life in America. And it felt, I wasn't sure what I was getting into. I was just scared, I was scared of it, and I was afraid of being sad or being, I don't know what I was going to feel. So I was very hesitant at first, but My birth family is very pushy, very aggressive, and very loving and overwhelming, and there were so many good things as well.
Yeah.
And it was really my sisters that convinced me to go that year, because they were so excited, and I felt like I related to them, and they just, you know, I could feel that they really were a close group of people. And something made me want to be part of that, or at least find out what it was all about.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your biological parents, these larger-than-life people, Wang Xi and Yang Shu.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My birth father, totally traditional Chinese man. He was a farmer. They were very poor. They are actually from an island between China and Taiwan. They emigrated to Taiwan before I was born. And they were just very traditional, and they are very hard workers.
Mm-hmm.
They cared very much. My birth father cared very much, actually, for his daughters. Even though he desperately wanted a son, he still made sure they got educated. He was very strict with them. He had lots of opinions about how their life could be better. Very pushy. A lot of us take after him. Hot-blooded. He is a very complicated character, and my birth mother is much. She's almost the stereotypical sort of Chinese woman in that she, you know, submisses to my father. She's very traditional. She believes that her role is the mother, the wife, the housekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
She still has a strong personality, though. I don't want to underplay that. She has her opinions. She can stand up in the fray of sisters and brothers and everything else. just as much as anybody, but in terms of sort of making big decisions in their lives, she felt powerless.
Yeah. Well, she has had a very interesting life from the time she was a girl and then a young woman. And, of course, a lot of heartache.
Yes.
Maybe you would read an excerpt from Lucky Girl.
Okay.
Where you ask her about how she feels about her life.
Sure. Let me introduce this section. After the initial reunion, over the next several years, I would go to Taiwan and some sisters would come to visit me in an effort to get to know each other. A lot of the time I was behind these visits because being just having more means and also being very curious, I wanted to get to know them. I wanted to try to figure out who they were and also how they fit in my life, as well as how this history fit in my life. In the later years, recently, I was feeling a bit frustrated because I really didn't know my birth mother very well. My birth father, as I said, his personality is very domineering. He was, you know, overwhelming in a lot of ways on the visits. My sisters, I knew better. But Ma was sort of this, still a mystery to me because we couldn't really communicate. She speaks Taiwanese first. My Mandarin was more or less not very good. It was better at sometimes, worse at others. But in the end, we actually weren't speaking the same language, even though I was studying Chinese. So I decided in 2006 to take her on a trip to China with one of my younger sisters who speaks English and Chinese. And this is the end of that trip, and I finally get to ask her some of the key questions. Here we go. On the last morning, as we were getting ready to head home, and I mean home back to Taiwan, I tried to wrap up my barrage of questions. How do you feel about your life? I asked. My whole life was worth nothing. It was not worth it to marry with Ba. We worked so hard when we were young, but in the end, it didn't work out. I gave him everything. I tried to give everyone a good life and never asked for anything in return. My whole life was my marriage. That's just what I had to do, and we have a bad relationship. But my life is not too bad. I can eat, and I can still spend whatever I want, thanks to her daughters and to her own thriftiness. That's enough. I don't really care what he does now. I can't change things. It's too late. The kids have a good life. That's enough for me. Buddhists have to be calm. I want to be a good Buddhist. I don't want to care about anything. I would like to go to the temple and worship more, but I can't read the text. Do you believe you had bad luck? I asked. I don't believe I've had a life of bad luck, but rather I have a life without hope, she replied. Ma never thanked me for the trip, or she never said in any language the exact words, "Thank you, Mei Ling." I asked her several times if she liked it, shamelessly fishing for a compliment. I was needy and wanted to be reassured that my effort was not overlooked. Are you happy with the trip? I asked. Yes, I'm very happy. I'm happy to be here with you in Minhui, I told her. I'm happy too. After we returned to Minhui's Taipei apartment, Ma sat down and proclaimed to me, I want to pay for my trip. I knew this was a gesture, this obligatory offer, her way of expressing her appreciation. No, no, I insisted, as you are supposed to do. Bu hao yi si. How embarrassing, she said. I never did anything for you. I shook my head. Don't worry about it. She handed me one of the small jars of pearl cream she had bought for each of her daughters. I went to bed that night and thought of how but Ma and I would never truly know each other. Perhaps we could if I gave up the life I knew, moved here, and gave everything to Taiwan, but I wasn't willing to do that. I had a feeling that no matter how hard I studied Mandarin or Taiwanese, or how much time I spent in the town where I had been born or the island where my parents had been raised, My birth mother and I would never have a fraction of the relationship she has had with Minwei or Jin Hong or my other sisters, or that I have with my own mom in the States. Ma will never be able to tell me one-on-one the stories of her youth. I would never know what she preferred to eat without asking. We would probably never bicker or fight, nor will one of us ever say something. Oh, excuse me. Lost my page.
No one will ever say something so mean.
Yes. Nor will one of us ever say something so mean about the other that the other dissolves into tears. I will never consult her about my insecurities, my disappointments, and my dreams. That kind of special mother-daughter relationship would always be uniquely reserved for my mom in Michigan, and that was fine. It would have to be.
Mm. That is Mei-Ling Hopgood reading from her memoir, Lucky Girl. What's the response been from your family here in the U.S. and there in Taiwan to this book, Lucky Girl?
My family in America, they've been fine with it. My mom is actually going on tour with me now, telling embarrassing stories to groups of readers. But and my brother's the same. They read the book, edited it, and they're very involved with the promotion of the book. My family in Taiwan, they know about the book, and they've been sent various manuscripts. My sisters, you know, sent me congratulatory emails when it came out. It's tough, though. I've gone to great lengths to make sure that they read it as much as they can. They've always known that I was going to do this, though. I've sat down with them and taken notes and with a tape recorder, etc. They always joke when another crazy thing happens that, you know, we'll have to write another book. I'm not sure that they really believe that it's actually going to happen, but, you know, there are actually hardbound copies on the way to them now, so they'll see it. But they do have the manuscript in hand, and they've always known.
Yeah. Back in 1997, when you and Sister Maureen arrived at Chiang Kai-shek Airport, 1997, jubilance, merry meeting, and lots of celebrating. But at the end of the day, Sister Maureen said she didn't think she'd ever seen a Chinese man cry.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that your father has changed in the years since you were adopted in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case?
Obviously I didn't know him back then.
Right.
Yes and no. My birth father is extremely emotional. And he is apt to cry and he has a hot temper, and he's just very emotional. And I suspect he was probably that way back then. I feel like he has not changed in a lot of ways, though, in terms of his belief that the boy is the most important thing that he can do or make. He continued to pursue that, even though my birth mother was done having kids. In that way, he has not changed. And he still thinks he's right in everything that he decided. And in that way, he hasn't. But I believe he probably did soften a bit. But, you know, I definitely know that he believes what he did was right and still does.
Yeah. Was there any talk of the son they adopted while giving up two daughters?
Yes. Talk with me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right away, when I first got letters and calls from them, they told me about the boy, my brother. They had adopted a son a year before, a little less than a year before I was born. And that was very, very prominent in all the letters. The first letter I even received describing the family, they said right away, you have this sister who is this age and does this. You have this sister and this age that does this. And you have this brother who is adopted and does this. So they made no effort to hide it from me at all, and which is ironic because they haven't told him he's adopted. And my sisters as well, it was a very big sore spot during my first visit because they were very worried about how I would feel knowing that they had adopted a son and given me up.
Yeah.
It was much more of a sensitive thing for them.
Well, one of the reasons I suspect that your birth father has softened a bit and maybe his ideas about girls and women have changed a little bit is that he asked you to find your sister who they had also given up for adoption.
Yes, yes.
What had your sister's experience been growing up? This is your sister Irene growing up in Switzerland.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. She's a great woman. She speaks English probably better than I do. She actually had a pretty similar childhood in that, you know, we had a very Western upbringing, Switzerland, a beautiful place, and she was very much a minority in that town. Her brother was also adopted from Taiwan. Her family went to Taiwan to adopt her and her brother, who came from another family. She, you know, we both like the same hockey stars, we found out, you know, when we wrote back and forth, we both, you know, like the same foods, some of the same interests. It was really interesting to get to know her. We had a lot more in common, obviously, because, number one, we could speak in the same language together. She speaks Swiss German first, but like I said, her English is impeccable. I would say she had a much more similar childhood than I did. I mean, obviously with some differences growing up in Switzerland, but we could relate a lot.
Hmm. They play hockey in Switzerland?
Yeah. Winter sport.
Winter sport, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. But when I think of Switzerland, of course, I think of skiing.
Yes.
And skating, and I really don't think of the NHL.
No, I mean, she followed it very much. We both love Steve Yzerman. That was a big revelation at that time.
So now, how do you keep in touch with your sisters? It's difficult for you to get any closer to your birth mother or father, but I would think that your sisters, I think that there would be a real possibility that you could have strong relationships with these other women.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, even today, I wish we could keep in touch more. We email each other. We, you know, do the internet chat sometimes. Life gets, you know, life sort of takes over sometimes, and we all have family and are living in such different parts of the world. It's difficult to keep in touch regularly, but we have an affinity, and we feel it when we actually do see each other, even if years pass now.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. It's nice that we can feel at home with each other still.
If we had everybody together, all the family members, American and Chinese, Swiss, if we had everybody together, how many of you would there be?
Oh, boy, I would have to count. Let me see. There would be dozens and dozens.
Yeah.
We actually had that in 1998 when I went back to Taiwan with my American parents, my two Korean brothers, Irene, who is my Swiss sister, and her adopted mother. It's enormous. It's 8, 9, 10. It's more than 20 people, definitely 25, and that's the immediate family only.
Yeah. So what is it like now? You're living in Buenos Aires?
Mm-hmm. I am.
So what's that like? Because it strikes me that you're really, not only are you a lucky girl, you're an American girl.
Yes, very, very much. I love Buenos Aires. It's been great. We've lived there for the last 4.5 years. My husband was the South America correspondent for the Washington Post, and he actually went to the University of Illinois.
Oh.
And It's been wonderful. It's been a whole different culture. It's a very, very different culture from the Chinese culture. People are much more touchy-feely, much warmer in a sense, much more in your face and direct. But we like it. I've always sort of had this wanderlust and been fascinated with other cultures, perhaps because of my background, because of my diverse family and background.
Yeah, and you, when you were, I think, in high school or in college, you traveled to Central America, South America?
It was Mexico.
Mexico,
I
okay.
I lived there for a semester in college. Yeah.
So,
yeah, no, I've always been fascinated by Latin America. So then came Asia, then now back to Latin America. We'll make it home, I'm sure, soon enough, but yeah. It's been really fun.
And you have a daughter, you and your husband. How old is she?
She is 21.
Wow.
21. Yep, yep. And she is American and Argentine.
Uh-huh.
So we've got a lot of nationalities in my family.
Yeah, it's the UN.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's cool because it's sort of like, you know, just the connections are so amazing. If I take a step back and look at all of it, it's just an amazing web of international connections. And I think people who read the book will see that it's not just about adoption, but it is about family connection and destiny and, you know, coming to terms with what we've been given and taking it our own way. It's my family's very, very diverse, and I like that.
Yeah. What led you to journalism and your interest in the wider world back when you were growing up in Taylor, Michigan?
I just loved to write. That's where it started. I always kept a journal, and I was always making up silly short stories and poems and things like that, and it just sort of naturally flowed into journalism when I was in high school, and that's what I ended up doing.
Yeah. Well, are you working now as a journalist, or has been working on the memoir been your writing life for the last little while here?
You know, the book process is so very long.
Yeah.
The writing process actually ended almost a year ago. I've been doing freelancing. I've been doing other projects. Baby was the big project. But, yeah, I mean, the book has taken up a lot of time. I've had some other projects that I've been working on, freelancing, travel, writing, et cetera, down in South America. Just a lot of little things.
Yeah. So what's it like being on the road with your birth mom? Not your birth mom, your adopted.
Oh, it's fun.
Mom.
It's been really fun. It just began, and
yeah.
And it's been really fun. It is. She totally. People are as curious about her as they are of me, and ask her a lot of questions, and she likes to tell some pretty funny, embarrassing stories. But it's fine. That's what it's all about. It's a lot of fun, though. It's great that we can experience this together. I mean, having been through this experience, like I said, it could have gone any way. And I think my parents prepared me, gave me the security to be able to handle this. And it's great that we can experience it together.
Yeah.
Because it really is dedicated to them, to my mother and my father, who passed away from a heart attack now. How many years has it been? 6 years ago, this whole story is very much a result of their love and support.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you're treasuring this time with your mother.
Yes.
Yes.
It's been fun.
Good.
It's been fun.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, and the best to you and your mom and the whole family.
Yes, thank you very much.
Both sides of the ocean and North and South America.
Yes.
Okay.
I did want to mention, if anybody wanted more information about the book, or we have some maps and family trees and things like that on our website.
Okay.
It's mailinghopgood.com.
Okay.
MEI-LING Hopgood, HOPGOOD.com. I'll be appearing in Chicago a couple times, and those on the 17th and on the 20th. So those at Women and Children First in Chicago on the 20th and the 17th with families with children from China in the Indian Prairie Library in Darien.
Okay, very good.
A little bit far from Urbana, but, you know.
We actually have listeners up that way.
Yeah,
so
great.
So if you're listening in and you're fascinated by this story, and it's a wonderful story, you have a couple of opportunities to meet Mei Ling Hopgood and her mom, Chris, in May.
Mom won't be coming to Chicago, though.
Oh, no. Okay. All right. I thought she was there for the duration.
No. Dropping in and out.
Okay. All right. So, Mei Ling Hopgood, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mei Ling Hopgood, author of the memoir Lucky Girl. The book is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. And again, I'll spell our guest's name for you, Mei Ling Hopgood, Hopgood.